With Laura Fox
Podcast.
Now, it is a universal truth that we are constantly trying to accomplish more in less time, but some of us can't seem to manage it, especially when it comes to our working lives. And since the pandemic, we've all become familiar with the term work harder, not smarter. But what does it really mean and how do we do it? Well, joining me now to give some advice in this department is career psychologist and author Sinead Brady. Sinead, you're very welcome along to the show.
Thank you for having me, Laura. It's a pleasure.
Well, we were talking off air about names, actually, which was quite gas, because your parents don't go by their names at all.
Nope. None of them. It's really funny. Like, my dad is called James Anthony and we all call him Tony. My mother is Margaret and she's called Marie the Little Better. But my mother-in-law is Elizabeth Scholastica and she's called Eilish.
That is wild. This is off the back, sorry, just in case anybody missed it. This is off the back of me and Cormac having a chat about Will Ferrell actually being called John.
Yes, so we
were trying
Irish.
To make the claim that he was very Irish.
Yes.
And there he is.
That's
he
it. And as a result, I don't even have a middle name. My mum was like, it's going to be so simple. Sinead Brady.
Don't.
End of story. You can't even shorten it.
Traumatised.
Yeah.
She's like, I just want to call my child what she's actually called. Yeah. That is not what we're here to talk about today, though. We are here to talk about one of my favourite terms of all time, and it is work smarter, not harder. I quote this on a weekly basis. And producer Etna is always saying to me, like, get a bit of that off you. I'm just like, I like getting from A to B in the quickest way possible.
Absolutely.
But do you think that the idea of working very hard and putting in the long hours is something that we learn at an early stage in life? Or is it something that is inherited from an older generation? Because there is that whole thing that nobody wants to be deemed as lazy.
Absolutely. And there's two really important points here. And I could talk about the first one all day. When we go to school, so 4-year-old Laura heading off to school or 4-year-old Sinead heading off to school I was taught, work hard.
Yeah.
Put in the hours. And even when you finish school, come home and do your homework. And do your homework really, really well. So from day one of our education, and this is no fault of educators, this is just the system. We are taught that you work all day in your job as a child at 4 or 5 up until whatever age, hard, really hard, and get everything done in school, be attentive, listen, get everything right. And then we turn around and we go, and by the way, you have to do homework when you go home and get that done really well.
It's
and
so
do that
cruel.
To really. So we actually train ourselves from the youngest of ages to become workaholics, to work really hard. It's not about the quantity of time that we spend, it's really about the quality of output. So that's the first part. That's the kind of the piece where we learn it through the system that is education. I've a massive admiration for educators. So this is not about educators. This is just about the system of education. Then older generations have always been like, work really hard. The longer you work, the more ambitious that you are. The longer that you work, the better worker that you are. But we actually are the first generations of workers who are working not for, yes, for survival. Yes, we all need money. We need financial security. We're in a cost of living crisis. But we are the first generation that are actually working because we want meaning from our jobs. Survival is kind of expected, you know, in most Western developed countries. So we are the first generation that is looking up and looking around and saying, okay, I am working to survive, but I also want meaning from my work. And that means that I don't necessarily want to spend every waking hour that I have working.
Yeah.
I want to have fun. I want to be with the people who make me smile. I want to have time and the energy to engage in my hobbies and my interests. And I really would actually like to eat, not standing up at a desk. And I'd really like to go to bed and sleep. And like, we've got these, I call them the non-negotiables that we have in life. And we're kind of going, no, actually, I'm not okay to sacrifice all of those things in order to have a job. And what we're seeing is that people are stepping away from those types of jobs and saying, you know, where I have to give everything of me to the organisation, I no longer want to work for that type of organisation. And people are moving with their feet. And I think that this is a watershed moment. I think it's brilliant. And yes, we have to work.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. This is not about kind of sitting around twiddling your thumbs and then expecting to get paid like 90 quid an hour or whatever. Yeah. This is about, that's a performance management issue, which is totally separate. This is about stepping up and saying, I will do my work to a high quality, to a really good standard, but I'm going to do it in the smartest way possible.
Do you think that we still live in an era where a lot of people are afraid to leave their work until their boss is gone, despite having everything done? I feel like I know a lot of people who are like, no, my boss is still here, so I kind of have time off for another, you know, 40 minutes. Hopefully he'll be gone then or she'll be gone then.
Absolutely. And that's where we are mistaken visibility for productivity and output and impact. So visibility does not equal the brilliance or how brilliant you are at your job. And I'm saying this constantly when I'm working in organizations with senior leaders. I'm like, people watch you. They kind of develop their sense of entitlement or almost feel a sense of permission to either leave or to stay based on what you do.
Yeah.
And if you're saying that there are policies here whereby if you've got your work done, if you've everything, go, you have to do the same.
Yeah.
Because if you are still sitting there at 7 o'clock in the evening, and if you're there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and if you're sending emails at 8 o'clock at night, and you're still sending them at like 5 o'clock the next morning, that is setting the tone for what everybody else thinks they should be doing in order to be successful here. So you as a leader has a you've got a really, really big role to play here. So you need to lead by example when you're in those type of positions. So people do feel that in order to be successful, if they see you putting in long hours, even if you're working really smart, they just don't see that they have the permission to do it.
Yeah, and like, I mean, nobody wants to be known as a slacker. And this, again, is not to mistake anybody for not working hard. You do. And especially in the early years of your career, you have to work incredibly hard to get to a position. But it's also about learning to enjoy life as well and that of walking away. You know, like that saying as well is like, this isn't about trying to dodge tasks that you have to do. Like, this is about putting the work in and getting them done, but then going, okay, I don't need to feel the guilt now. I can actually walk away from this.
Yeah, and it's. I think it's also about being a little bit clever here as well, because sometimes what happens is when you're really effective and you get your work done really quickly, you get rewarded with getting more work.
Yeah, always. Oh my God. But it happens in everything. It's like, and going back to like early years, if you think about it, like if you were in school and you finished a test first, you'd be given something else to move on to. In the gym, if you like finish a set of like burpees, they're like, okay, we'll get on the treadmill and start running. It happens in every... So sometimes you're like, I might stretch this out a little bit longer.
Yeah, sometimes you have to play the game and be a little strategic.
Yeah.
So, you know, you may not always need to, there's a, you know, on Instagram, there's somebody has put their mouse onto their cat's back.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's keeping the thing alive. But that's not what we're advocating either. But, you know, if you have your work done, if it's done to a high standard, again, this is a kind of an organisational cultural piece. It's where leaders need to step up and say, okay, so we're doing really, really brilliantly here. Yeah. This doesn't have to be rewarded with more work. You know, this can be rewarded perhaps with strategic things that can help you to progress in your career.
Yeah.
So this is like, I'm really excited about having these conversations, because this is an opportunity to shift how we think about work, because the world of work really is broken as it sits currently. It doesn't work for the majority of people. Mm-hmm. And we need to think differently about it so that people can live life while making a living. It's not just about always working, always been on. And in fact, we know from research, I think this is fascinating, once you go above 55 hours per week at work, let that be paid or unpaid work, you begin to reach burnout.
Yeah.
So you become less productive. So at 55 hours per week to 70 hours per week, if that's what you were doing, and some people are doing massive hours like that, you actually might as well not be working anymore, because your productivity levels decline sharply between 55 and 70 hours per week. So we need to just embrace this much more softer approach to work, to life, and just generally to each other.
Yeah.
A little bit more kindness, a little bit more compassion, and absolutely work hard, but be really smart in how you do it so that you can get quality rather than quantity.
Do you think it's an ego thing as well? Like, if we look at, you know, like the generations before us who like have worked incredibly hard the entire time, you don't want them to be like, oh well, they're at nothing. Like, it's like any of our parents who will get up at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and you, if you're in bed past 8, it's like, oh, the day is gone, you've slept it away.
The Hoover is suddenly kind of knocking around the door. So there is that element of it too, but there's always going to be these kind of improvements from generation to generation. And I mean, if you think of the way, for example, that my parents' generation, possibly your grandparents' generation, worked, they worked in a way that work did not come home with them.
Yeah.
So work was a very fixed place and space. That happened. So you could actually leave it behind you, and you could get up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning because you hadn't had work interfere with your peace and quiet on the Friday beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, after you left work, there was no WhatsApp messages, there was no IMs, there was no Slack messages, there was no emails. You left work and that was it. When you took your holidays, bar somebody rang a phone that was physically fixed to the wall in your house.
Yeah.
Nobody contacted you. Nobody knew where you were. There was no social media. There was, you know, so work was very, very different. And things had to be done in a much more you know, even if you take, been in an office where people are using AutoCAD for drawings mm-hmm. and so on. I mean, that was all a very laborious process before, because it started off with a blank page and a pen, and it had to go through the different iterations. Now it still does, but it's a much quicker process now because it's all computerized. So we can work smarter and still have the same outputs.
Yeah.
So we're not comparing like with like. So when kind of, you know, the idea that been in bed until 8 o'clock is wasting away half your day, you know, maybe buy some earplugs or something, or have a conversation about how things are done just differently. But it is about kind of just two generations moving. Like the rate and pace of change has been so massive in the last 10 years. And even with AI, I mean, Laura, there are things that we can use AI for now that is just so clever. Mm. I mean, you can help AI can. So if you use whatever version of AI you use, ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, whatever that looks like, you can go into it and say, these are the tasks that I have to do between now and on Friday. I'd like to make the most of my time. Please act as a productivity coach to help me to do this. And it will give you and tell them how many hours you have and so on. And it'll give you kind of a framework for managing your time.
And putting that into it.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Like, it's so helpful. These are things that before. So, but the only thing is, we have to say, when you work smarter, not harder, what are you going to replace that time with? Like, how are you going to replace? Is it going to be with more work? And if it is, that's a very different.
Yeah.
Or is it going to be with, you know, actually, I do need to move more. I do need to eat my lunch while I'm not at my desk. I do need to, you know, actually have the energy to spend time with people who make me smile when I go home in the evening or after work. So I think if we could kind of have that softer, more gentle, compassionate approach to how we treat ourselves and we treat others, I think the world's work would be a lot better place.
Lastly, Sinead, I know you just mentioned there even the productivity tool of using that. Like, this is the nitty gritty of it now. Okay, it's all good and well saying work smarter, not harder, yada, yada, yada. How do we actually implement this into our life? If somebody's listening right now and they're drowning in work and they're very overwhelmed by it, what's kind of one thing that they can do?
Okay, so if you are drowning in work now, a really simple thing to do is, and I'll put it up on my social media as a post, is the Eisenhower Matrix. I don't know if you've heard of it or others have heard of it, but it's a quadrant. It separates your work up into four sections. So sometimes what happens is we have a to-do list, which is great, and a to-do list is really helpful, but not everything on it is both urgent and important.
Yeah.
So the Eisenhower Matrix helps you to split up your tasks into things that you need to do immediately, things that can wait, things that can be delegated to somebody else or left, like scheduled into the long term, or things that can actually be deleted entirely. Because some stuff on the to-do list is just like, you know what? You just don't need it. So the Eisenhower Matrix is brilliant for that. And then when you see what's in the Eisenhower Matrix in that important and urgent kind of quadrant, and really there should only be two or three things in there. It shouldn't be everything on the to-do list in that important. Use the Pompadour method to schedule time. So look at, and again, you can use AI and say, okay, break down these three tasks into the parts that are needed to do them.
Yeah.
And then use the Pompadour method, 25 minutes focused time or 45 minutes at max, focused time where you do nothing else bar focus on that particular task. That means no phone, no checking emails, nothing like that. So put on a timer. I would suggest if you're not used to this, you need to start at about 20 minutes because any longer feels too long. 5 minute break, and you do that until you get to the end of the task, and like very quickly you begin to work in these structured ways. That and then the other thing is a not-to-do list.
Okay,
so the things that you are not doing today. So I will not be distracted by Fiona, who always comes in and lobs desk stuff. I'm just like, have a word for Fiona and say, Fiona, not today.
This John, is me. I am Fiona in the office. I ruin everybody's life.
John, not today.
Okay.
I'm really glad you're thinking of me, but I've got this list of priorities and I will come back to you when I'm ready to do that.
Yeah.
Like, these are the things that I will not be distracted by. Because, you know, and one of the other things that we're distracted by from home, I work from home, is kind of getting caught up with the domestic chores
getting
that are in the house.
Done. Yeah.
That is, so you have to think of your work space. And like, not everybody has the luxury of a work office at home, but your workspace, you have to think of it as just that and kind of have these cognitive triggers that remind you that when you are in that space, it is not to do the washing, it is not to clean up the cups after everybody else that has left them on top of the dishwasher rather than in it before you, you know. So it's really, this is my work space. Now I'm entering into it. So that could be, you know, little cognitive triggers. Like, I always wear lipstick when I'm working. That's really important for me. So everybody will have different things. Just things that tell you that you're switching into work mode.
Okay, well, hopefully this can help everybody work smarter and not harder. Sinead, thank you so much for coming in. That was career psychologist and author Sinead Brady.
With Laura Fox.
Podcast.